all, and welcome to Southern Fried Spooky, the podcast home of all things Southern Spooky, and this week, Willfully Disobedient.
Of course.
I'm your Carolina girl, Heather.
And I'm your Florida man, Tony.
We'd like to invite you to the virtual boot camp that is our Facebook page, and keep in touch, comment, ask questions, etc.
Do something.
We also have a Patreon, just saying. This week, we're delving into some military history, courtesy of Tony. Mm-hmm. If you have never heard of the heroism, the courage, the outright insanity of World War II paratrooper Jake McNeese, you're in for a treat. His escapades are documented in his words in The Filthy 13, Fighting with the Filthy 13, and War Paint, The Filthy 13, Jump into Normandy.
Indeed.
He has a lot of literature about him.
Yes, he does.
He's had the most stupendous 3 years in the military that I've ever heard of. His story, to put it delicately, is just bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
Once more, this isn't actually spooky, but it's just so unbelievable we just had to share.
It is one of the most insane stories I've ever heard come out of World War II.
And it's one of those that if someone pitched this as a movie idea, the producers would be like, no one's going to believe that.
And it would make for a great movie.
And
should. They made one in 1967.
Well, okay, but I think they should make a better one.
Yeah. Like Jake McNeese.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. In case you're wondering, The Dirty Dozen
was based on this story. Yeah.
I don't know why they decided to cut out one of the guys, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The Dirty Baker's Dozen doesn't sound the same, I guess.
Okay,
so first the boring stuff.
Yeah.
Biographical tidbits. James Elbert, mm-hmm. Jake McNeese, May 24th, 1919 to January 21st, 2013.
He held on.
He was an old guy.
He was 6 years away from 100 years old.
Which is impressive, considering that, much like you, I'm surprised he made it past, like, 11.
Yeah.
He was a U.S. Army paratrooper in mm-hmm. World War II.
He was.
Private Perpetually McNeese was a member of a group he called the Filthy 13.
Well, they earned the name, but yeah.
Yeah. An elite demolition unit whose exploits inspired the novel and the film that we aforementioned.
The Dirty Dozen.
Indeed. James McNeese, I'm not sure where the Jake comes from, but it sounds better.
Yeah.
Was born in Maysville, Oklahoma. The 9th of 10 children
mm-hmm.
born to Eli and Rebecca McNeese. He was of Irish and Choctaw descent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your basic mutt American. And during the Depression, the family moved to Ponca City, if I'm saying that wrong, I'm sorry, Oklahoma, in 1931. It is my absolute conviction that as the 9th of 10 children, his parents probably forgot he existed.
Yeah.
They did not care. I mean, maybe they did. I don't know.
Can you imagine that? Hey,
you there.
What's that one's name? No, the other one,
Is that number 8 or 9?
Jasper, James, sorry!
So he and his siblings, given that it's the Depression, learned all kinds of food production skills, hunting, gathering, trapping.
You earn all that stuff.
And one thing I know you found fascinating, he had a full-time job at the age
10,
of
10. At 10.
Obviously, they didn't have the child labor laws in place at that point. And he worked all his time through high school.
Yep.
He graduated in 1939 and immediately became a firefighter.
And promptly became a firefighter. Yes,
again, he's so like Tony, who was also a firefighter. He just liked doing dangerous things. I imagine if bungee jumping and just jumping out of planes for fun was a thing, he'd probably be doing that too.
Yeah.
So, McNeese enlisted for military service September 1st, 1942. Technically, he didn't really have to because he was a firefighter.
Yeah, he was exempt from the draft. When you work, like,
first responders,
civil service, whatnot, you are automatically exempt from drafting.
Because you're kind of important?
Yeah.
However, Pearl Harbor had just happened, and, you know, everyone was kind of gung-ho to join the war.
Indeed.
Well, okay, everyone who wasn't drafted, I guess. So, I don't know if you can choose where you want to go, but I know he wanted to be in demolition, and he ended up in demolition.
Mm-hmm.
He was assigned to the Demolition Saboteur section of what was then the 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment. That is hard to say in one breath.
Okay.
Go for it.
it would use, say, the 506th.
Okay.
Yeah, just saying, not 506th, 506th.
506th.
TH.
Then you say that 6th.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You didn't say it that way.
Okay.
But apparently he excelled at all of his training. But McNeese had a bit of an attitude and disrespect towards his superiors, I suppose.
Yeah.
And he never got promoted past private.
Nope. And you're supposed to.
Do explain that.
Well, I mean, like, they, after 30 days, a private is supposed to be taken up to a private, well, back then, a private was supposed to be taken to a private first class before their first appointment. He didn't.
By the way, if you are on YouTube, there's not a lot I found online about this guy for my quick research, but we found, or rather Tony found, on YouTube, a gentleman by the handle The Fat Electrician. He does military history, and he is hilarious.
Yeah, look up Jake McNasty.
We watched his snippet like 4 times, and while I'm not trying to copy it, there are some elements that we borrowed because it's funny and true. The way he put it was that McNeese was immediately an enormous pain in the rear for his chain of command. Mm-hmm. He was a terrible soldier in the aspect that he didn't really care for rules or timelines and sobriety.
Yeah, I was about to say, or even being sober.
So he didn't respect his officers. Nope. He did not salute.
Unless they saluted him.
Yeah. So, Tony and I discussed this. Were there not a war on, he would have been kicked out immediately. Oh, yeah.
He is the truest form of an anti-hero.
Yeah. I mean, he gets things done.
Just not in the most heroic manner.
It's
this guy embodies the term, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
It's like one of my friends, allegedly in Army, he did something really stupid and got hurt in the process. And so they're like, we'd like to give you a Purple Heart, but if you acknowledge the hijinks you did, we'd have to kick you out. So you get nothing.
Right.
So it'd be kind of like that. Anyway, the superiors did at least acknowledge that in the field of combat, his his Jake-ness would come in handy.
Yeah.
For example, he got into a fight with the staff sergeant his very first week. Why did he get into a fight?
Because he didn't give him butter for his bread.
Yeah, in the dining hall.
He got into a fight with the guy because they didn't have butter for bread.
So his superiors were forced to wrestle with this dilemma about McNeese and just hope they could slide him through training and get him to the part where they can toss him at the enemy and he's no longer their problem. So they kind of made him his own platoon?
Yep. No. Okay, so they didn't put a platoon together. They made a single man platoon and put him in charge of it.
Right. They made him his own platoon.
They made him singular into a platoon.
But that was convenient because periodically someone else that was similarly difficult would come along and
when they let their Jake show.
Yeah. When the superiors were like, oh god, another one, they put him with Jake, and apparently they all got along right well.
There were 5 of them originally.
And on their night before shipping out, as was customary, they had a night of leave to go off and party. Whereupon they got drunk and had a slight run-in with some MPs who did not find Jake and their his boys very endearing.
Well, to be perfectly honest,
yes, do tell.
The MPs were picking on one of Jake's men, and Jake tried to stop them, kind of standing up for his own guy. Said, "Look, he's drunk. I'll get him back to the base." And the guy told Jake to mind his own business, where Jake promptly minded his own business.
Unfortunately, and that involved the guys.
And beat the crap out of the 2 MPs, disarmed them.
Yeah.
They stole 2 Colt 45s, fired them off into street sign and street light alike, handed them back their empty weapons, and said, "Now you can take me to jail."
At least he didn't have any lofty expectations of what was going to happen after that.
Yeah, like, he knew what was about to come, what was coming.
I can just imagine someone coming along on the scene later and being like Willem Dafoe in Boondock Saints.
Yeah.
There was a firefight!
Right.
There was a disaster, but... So, vandalism. So, he got thrown in the stockade.
Yes.
And the next morning, his commanding officer... I don't think they even blinked in either. It's like, oh, he's there? Imagine that. They visited him in military prison.
So, we just wanted to let you know, sir, that McNeese is in lockup again. What did he do this time?
What hasn't he done? okay.
Oh, God, who died?
Is anything broken? Do we need to know? Okay, is he going to cost us money? So, anyway, the commanding officer comes to visit Jake and, I guess, his men, and inform them that, you know, they're... trip to Fort Benning is 136 miles.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted the men to march all the way there.
Yep.
The 136 miles. And why was that?
Because the Japanese had held the world record for that, and the...
That being, what, just a really long hike?
The longest hump, the longest military hump.
And just sounds so bad.
The sergeant wanted to beat that, and went to Jake and said, hey, we want you to walk 136 miles, and Jake went, okay. Yeah, that 136 miles, I can handle that.
After 10 days of sitting in jail with no exercise, or that still baffles me, I can barely walk around my own neighborhood. They walked, or marched, to airborne school.
In North Carolina.
Which is kind of our thing of, part of it is in the South, and apparently, allegedly, according to the story, Jake bragged and did the, I'll go, and I won't even change my socks, which sounds gross, and I'll be fine.
And he won't get blisters. That was his thing. He said, I will not change my socks, and I will not have a blister. And when he got there, he did not change his socks, and he did not have a blister after 136 miles of marching. That is with 80 pounds on your back, by the way.
I really hope that at least once he got there, he took those socks and burned them.
One would hope. They would probably be highly flammable at that point.
No doubt. So, his training happens with no real... interruptions, as far as we know.
I mean, he excels at everything he does in his training.
So, and he still has not been promoted, by the way.
Yeah, no,
like, he's
no
the de facto guy in charge. They always look to him, but officially, he's the lowest guy there.
Like, it's like when the rest of them kind of look at the bottom of the totem pole going, what are you going to do?
Right. So they learn more about demolition and how to cause a ruckus in civilized society. Like, how to drive any kind of cool... equipment, backhoes.
Tanks, cars, trains, planes, that type of deal.
Planes? I don't know about that. But, so the night before they head to England, they're granted another night of leave. That sounds like a great idea, doesn't it? I guess it went better than the first time. But anyway, they were in this little diner, I guess trying to work off whatever drunk they had started. And the diner was next to a train station.
Yep.
And having done the 136-mile march, apparently Jake just decided this night he did not feel like walking back to base.
Yep.
So he decided to put some of his new skills to use and stole a train that was parked outside the diner.
Yep. Drove it all the way back to the base.
I wonder if he took his guys with him, or was it like a one-man thing?
I'm not sure. I don't think it really says, but I know that he said that there was train tracks like a quarter mile away, and he just drove it there.
Okay, part of me is like, someone somewhere is going to be like, there's an unaccounted for train on the tracks, someone's going to get hit.
Yeah.
But, you know, he didn't really think about that, I guess. He just wanted to get back. He went back to base and went to bed.
Yep.
And I guess whoever noticed that there was a missing train next to the base, they knew, they had to know it was him, but nobody did anything about it.
I mean, what are they going to do? Put him in a plane and ship him off to war?
At this point, they'd just given up on, like, really trying to punish him. The best they could do was put him in the stockade where at least they knew where he was.
Yeah.
So Jake and several other of his guys.
His five, yep.
And, you know, a sort of other gentlemen were sent to England. As a little side note, Jake and his group decided that English food lacks flavor and is generally inedible. Sorry, British guys. So he takes his lifelong hunting trapping skills and proceeds to hunt and eat anything he can find.
Yep.
Not just for himself. He gets it for his men, too. You know, the ones who are all higher ranked than him.
And which, I don't know if our listeners know, but hunting is a lord and lady thing?
Yeah, well,
it's
in
by
England...
the upper crust?
Yes. As I understand, at least in this time, it may still be. The game are the property of the monarch.
Yeah.
And it is the lords and ladies of the peerage who have permission to hunt.
Yep.
He definitely didn't fit into that.
I was about to say, Jake was not.
But here again, did Jake care?
No.
No.
No, not at all.
So to my amusement, I'm thinking, okay, if you're elite, it's hunting. If you're some poor guy from America or even in England, it's just poaching.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, also curiously, there's water rationing. They're rationing everything. So most people, and soldiers specifically here, were permitted one shower a week, mm-hmm. which, you know, we all... How many of us during COVID did just that? It's fine. But Jake's crew decided to forego their weekly shower and use that water in the cleaning, prepping, and cooking of their poached food.
Yeah, their poached food.
Their poached food.
Yep.
So, apparently, the name Filthy 13 wasn't just about their ferocity. It was about how much you did not want to be seated next to them on the stolen train.
Yeah, exactly.
They were known to disappear from their barracks for long, liquid, and occasionally violent weekends. Shortly before D-Day, Jake's division was given the task of capturing and protecting a specific bridge. At this point, I'm sure it's recorded in his books what bridge it is and why, but a strategic bridge, we'll say. Failing that, destroy the bridge.
Indeed. Yeah.
Capture it or make it go away. That's what we want. It was difficult, but the upper command were hoping that Jake and his miscreants will prove to be worth the trouble he has put them through. And they can now launch this man at the enemy.
Yes. Throw that fragmentation grenade of bad decisions at them.
Yes, that was a great line from Mr. Fat.
Oh, that's horrible. That is... very edited as opposed to the Fat Electrician's version.
Go ahead and give the quote, because it was hilarious.
The quote is, a fragmentation grenade of fuckery and bad decisions.
They could finally...
Oh, they could finally yeet at the enemy.
That's just a wonderful summation of what this is. So, at this point, they're about to go and see some actual action, which, you know, I guess for them is exciting. McNeese decides to give himself a mohawk and face paint, and he does look fierce, and his crew decides to follow suit.
Yep.
Now, what's kind of cool is you can look this up on YouTube. There were film crews around
absolutely,
at the time.
Absolutely, which the Filthy 13 were completely unaware of.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't really noticing, I guess, because there's photographers and cameras all over the place anyway. So they were becoming a viral sensation before that was really a phrase.
A viral sensation in the 40s.
And the new makeover was a disturbing look to the Germans. And he even kind of frightened the French, really.
Well, and also keep in mind, one of the reasons why Jake did this was there was a bad lice epidemic going through Germany at the time. So shaving his head just seemed like the right thing to do.
He did cite that he was sort of calling upon his Choctaw ancestry. Yeah. But, you know, his widow some eons later did confess that the look really just scared the Europeans. And they're like, oh my God, what is that? So they take off, and apparently there's not just him, just dozens and dozens of planes flying, filled with paratroopers. So Jake's plane gets hit, and everyone has to jump a little early.
Yep.
It does not really specify here how many died, but a few of his 13 crew did not make it to the ground.
Yeah.
The rest were, since they had an impromptu, unscheduled early jump, they were scattered about the countryside. But we're basically fine. He eventually comes across, you know, other men who are scattered around and probably not where they intended to be, but, you know. And he encourages them to help him capture/destroy the bridge in question.
I just think it's funny that he finds a machine gunner that lost his machine gun.
Yeah, at that point it's sort of like, well, I have a purpose, but I can't fulfill it.
Well, yeah, like, dude is just running around with a bunch of bandoliers wrapped around him. And Jake is just like, just take my grenades and go. So he's like...
So over the course of the evening or whatever, he collects like 35 guys.
Yeah.
He makes his own platoon again. Well, a colonel decides, you know, being the upper brass that they are, sees this collection of guys and said, you, I need you to pull security for me.
Mm-hmm.
And Jake, being Jake, is like, well, I've already got a mission. And the colonel says, I don't care. Well, apparently, the security job was in the same direction as the bridge, so Jake just decided to say, okay. And he and his 35 men went to the security checkpoint, or whatever it was.
And kept walking.
And kept going. He did tell the guys, you can stay and do this, but I'm going to go do my bridge thing.
I can imagine him walking by, looking the place over for like 30 seconds, just,
seems secure?
It's secure, let's go!
All 35 opted to go with him. I guess he just seemed like a lot more fun.
Yeah, he just flat out said, look, if you want to stay and do this, you can, but I got something I got to do. And all of the 35 guys that he had united were like, no, we're coming with you.
So they go on, they capture the bridge, mm-hmm. and they hold it for 3 days
yep.
until a squadron, well, an American squadron, flew over and blew up the bridge for
him. Well, they had thought he failed.
Which is a sad expectation. They just didn't give him credit.
Yeah.
But they decided to defend this area because...
they knew this is where a Nazi retreat would be.
Yeah, they knew where the bridge had been would yeah. be a route that people would... oh, yeah. Things would happen. So they just waited around for, I don't even know how long.
Yeah.
A couple of days, maybe.
I mean, there were quite a few little skirmishes that happened before. Like, while they were waiting at the bridge, there were a couple little skirmishes yeah. that happened. But nothing as big as what's about to happen.
Well... after a little bit of waiting, where the bridge was, it was over a mm-hmm. ravine that had a little river or creek at the bottom of it. So the bridge would have been useful, but it's not entirely impassable, just yeah. awkward.
Yeah, you'd have to, like, go down the ravine,
wade and then back the river, up.
And then back up the side of a ravine. Yeah.
Well, who should show up but 700 of the German army?
Let's call them Nazis.
We can. I mean, I don't know that all of them were in the Nazi ideology, but, you know, fair enough. 700 of the enemy at the time, we shall say. They appear, and the gentleman, loosely using that term, in charge, basically says, I have 700 men. You clearly have 35. Why don't you go ahead and surrender?
Now, keep in mind that this Nazi general kind of walked out under a white flag.
Yeah, saying, okay, I want to talk to you yeah, for a second.
Yeah, he's like, look, we need to talk, you know.
Let us go by.
Yeah.
You really don't need to, you know, you don't need to die stupidly. But yeah. Jake, of course, had other ideas.
Jake wanted to do Jake things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jake also had, apparently, an unerring sense of strategy.
Yep.
And, do you want to explain this, or shall I read it off?
Explain which, what happened?
Well, not just even what happened, but the, options that Jake gave the general.
Okay.
Why he didn't surrender immediately.
So, Jake, now keep in mind, he had already earned the title Jake McNasty at this point.
Oh, nice.
So he had that name going around, just to start this off. And it wasn't just about his... hygiene, it was about how he handled things.
He seems eminently practical, and let's just get down to basics.
Jake knew that this was a retreat route for the Nazis, so he kind of looked at the guy and was like, well, you're running towards me, which means my buddies are behind you chasing you.
Which means you're running away.
So either give up to me, or we're going to fight this out. And you don't want that because we have the high ground, and yeah.
And again, for military strategy, and I'm not one of those people, I just, you know, I've seen enough of Star Wars, there's something about the high ground. I guess you don't want to fire up, it's easier to fire down.
Well, yeah, and also, when you're down, you're more exposed, especially in this kind of... everybody's up, they're embedded, they're yeah. like just in one position, and everyone else is just running into this wall of bullets, and, you know...
that sounds smart.
A lifetime of poor decisions, like, they're just running into this, and they promptly Anakin Skywalker'd themselves.
So, yes, the 700, then, you know, seeing that they do have numbers on their mm-hmm. side, they go down the ravine, into the water, and before they can climb out... Jake's crew just very neatly picked them off.
Yep. I mean, quickly and severely. And on that day, Jake and his squad were responsible for removing 700 enemy combatants, as it were.
700 against 35.
And not one of the 35 died.
I mean, you have to admit, the German officer, the Nazi officer, probably thought and had in his mind that, yeah, they definitely had the numbers, but... that's not always the thing that wins.
Yeah, like, these guys rushed into a ravine, and that's where they ended.
So.
Yeah.
That happened. The group that is eventually picked up, and everyone's sort of sorted out and yeah. evacuated and sent back to their original groups.
You belong to this group, and you belong to that group. Everybody
yeah, I've always wondered when you have paratroopers just bailing out all over... how do they keep things in order? Well, apparently they don't. They just land where they land and hope for the best.
Back then, yes. Because there was no way of, like...
I mean, nowadays, they don't have cell phones or GPS.
And also, nowadays, parachutes you can steer because have, like, harness holders. And, like, you can move the parachute to where you're going to go. Back then, you just kind of cross your arms in front of your chest, jump out, and try to land softly.
Somewhere that you hope is vaguely on target.
Yeah.
Well, Jake ends up in France, and he gets a few weeks of rest and, no doubt, alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
He is informed that he would be undertaking further training and participation in Operation Market Garden, which sounds really nice. But it's an innocuous name given to what is apparently one of the bigger operations involving 38,000 paratroopers jumping into Holland, which was being at
It was held by Nazis at that point.
It was held against its will very much.
It was like a town under siege.
So, once again, he lands, defends, or destroys another series of bridges.
Yep, which he is becoming well versed at.
And is then sent to Eindhoven in Holland, where they literally go through the town, taking out Nazis, building by building, room by room.
Yeah, and they did it in a very specific way.
And we're going to say that this is not exactly militarily interesting, but we just thought it was a funny little side story.
Yeah.
So while clearing the buildings, he comes across a chicken.
Yep.
God knows there's a living chicken amongst thousands of soldiers.
Yep.
And the chicken is brooding 6 eggs. Now, you know, little protein things that they are, they're a coveted commodity, and he is not about to give them up.
Nope.
So he picks them up, sticks
them in
his
cargo pocket, put 6 eggs in his cargo pocket.
Now, while clearing the rooms generally means you drop down and crawl like you're coming out of a burning building because it was dusty and...
Yeah, like the grenades would, like, shoot up dust and debris and smoke, and, like, you would literally have to get low to get underneath this stuff. And his training as a firefighter must have come in handy at that point.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
But instead of just scooting along in that low crawl, he didn't want to risk his eggs.
He's laying on the side that doesn't have the eggs.
He's going about this sideways.
So this man is in full firefight, protecting 6 eggs in his pocket.
And once they cleared the village,
10
Nazi tanks roll in. Jake and his crew manage to disable the tanks. They basically break the treads, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
While the other soldiers are using flamethrowers and...
just, they would run over to the tanks, stick them in any opening, and just open the nozzle of the flame.
They turn the tanks into toasters.
Yes, pretty much. Into very, very big ovens.
Yeah. So, it took 10 tanks, and Jake tragically lost one single egg.
One single egg was broken in his pocket.
He was left with 5 that he enjoyed that night,
believe. Indeed.
So,
this man,
dumb, silly, but also kind of badass.
This man took on an entire village of enemy combatants. It took an entire village and 10 tanks to break one egg.
That probably ticked him off mightily.
That was Humpty Dumpty at that point.
So his group was collected once more.
Can you imagine just walking over as he's like, he pulls out all the eggs and one of them is broken and he like gets this look on his face, and then like a guy walks by him and he's like, all the king's horses and all the king's men.
I don't know. If I were like someone who knew him and saw that, I'd be like, nope, just turn around and walk the other way. You know, he's gonna be mad now. So his group was rounded up, collected, and sent to France.
Yep.
Or back to France.
Back to France.
Curiously, and it might have had something to do with the 82nd Airborne, paratroopers were banned from the taverns in the town they were at.
The 82nd Airborne were known for their
antics.
Yes, antics. We'll leave it at antics.
Hijinks.
Yes, shenanigans.
Shenanigans, indeed. But Jake was not really worried about this, so he decides to take a quote 72-hour leave to travel to Paris, visit a distillery, and come back.
Now, keep in mind, where he's at, Paris is 2 days away.
So his superiors are like, you sure you want to do this? And
what are they going to do, stop him?
They didn't. But when he got back, he was put in the stockade for being AWOL for 5 days.
Which means he had been gone for a grand total of 8 days.
Eh, that might be a little much.
Yep.
I'm hoping that everyone else enjoyed whatever it is he brought back.
You're right.
But while they had him, yeah, they had these little heart-to-heart talks with him in the stockade.
Only when he was in the stockade. That's like cornering someone just to talk to them.
All right, while you're in timeout, we're going to have this discussion.
What did we learn?
But it was never about that. They're like, okay, while we have you, we want to talk to you.
Since we have your attention.
We want to talk to you about joining the Pathfinders.
Oh, Pathfinder. Oh, yeah.
Now, some of you are probably thinking, ooh, that's a game. That's kind of my first thought.
Should I explain Pathfinder?
Absolutely explain it.
Okay, so in World War II, there were these groups. Usually, it would be two men on a Pathfinder squad, or even sometimes one man.
But what did they do?
They would jump a day or two before the initial, like the big parachute jumps, and they would scout around for clear landing zones, like where they could drop their ordnance and stuff like that. Pathfinders had an 80% mortality rate.
That, as I understand, they couldn't actually order anybody to do this.
No. This is completely voluntarily.
Because like, dangerous.
It's voluntary. Like, you cannot be told to be a Pathfinder.
And if you watch The Fat Electrician, at this point, he says, oh, God, now they're trying to kill me.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, seriously, Pathfinders, 80% mortality rate. They usually sent them in twos because they knew one of them wasn't coming back.
Just sort of planning ahead for the eventuality. Wasn't it they also sent like two sets of
two
whatever
sets
the equipment
of gear
was?
Because they were going to lose their radios.
Well, the school is in England.
Yeah.
Well, okay. He doesn't answer immediately. He's like, let me think on that for a minute.
Yeah.
So the school's in England, and he considers that maybe the war will be over before he's done.
Yep.
And in the meantime, Oxford is right down the road, and the only students there are the ladies.
Because
all the men are at war.
Because all the other men are at war, so...
He kind of likes those odds.
Yeah. What was it said that he was going to do? What was it?
Engage in some graduate work or postgraduate work?
Engage in some postgraduate work.
So he decided to give some terms.
Yep.
He asked to be a first sergeant, despite technically still being a private.
Yep.
And he set down a few other rules, but...
Like, his men only had to get, they could only eat Air Force food, because Air
Force
food
better.
Was better. And that if any time his men wanted to quit, they could just walk away.
And apparently, whoever was asking him of this said, okay.
Yep.
Okie dokie.
Yep. Okie dokie.
So he gets sent to the Battle of the Bulge.
Now, keep in mind, before this, he does the Battle of the Bulge, and we'll explain that here in a minute. But Jake goes to the school... picks out 20 of the best freaking Pathfinders he can get, and these are the men going in.
He makes his own dream team.
Yes.
The battle in question here is like the last Hail Mary of the German forces.
Yeah. Battle of the Bulge was a city that was surrounded. I think it was Bastogne,
I think is how I would say it, but that's very French.
Yeah.
So what is it, the 101st?
Yep.
Airborne was sort of trapped in Bastogne, and they had nothing.
Yeah, they hadn't heard from them in days before McNasty got on board.
Now, I don't personally understand how this works, but I think you do. Jake and his crew were instructed to go in and call in resupplies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know why the 101 couldn't do that.
Because they hadn't heard from them in days. They were in fear that their equipment was destroyed.
So.
And you don't want to... just go, well, we can just drop supplies, because if the 101st has been taken down, you're just going to be dropping fresh supplies into an enemy lap. So you just kind of go, we're going to send somebody in there, make sure everything's good, then you guys radio in supplies.
So over the course of 5 days, running back and forth and around town so that they can't
so
be
they
triangling.
So they can triangulate their position, yeah.
Jake and crew proceed to call in resupplies 948 times.
Yep.
So I guess they had plenty of supplies.
Yep.
After that.
Keep in mind, resupplies also like bombing and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know much about that, hence you get to talk about it. So the 101st could hang on until Patton shows up eventually. Yep.
With 35,000 people.
So, McNeese and his crew save the day. Woo!
Yep.
He also ends up jumping back in and calling in resupply to assist Patton himself.
Yeah.
So, he has ultimately conducted, or will have conducted, four combat jumps during World War One.
World War Two.
You're right. He was probably a little young then.
Yeah.
But I was not aware. I thought, if you're a paratrooper, surely you jump all the time. But I guess not.
You jump maybe once or twice.
That's a lot of training for a one-time thing.
Yes. You jump maybe once or twice, because usually when you landed, you were stuck with somebody.
Yeah. Now, for the rest of what was left of the war, and it was really kind of winding down.
Yeah. The Battle of the Bulge was the last, like, Nazi, like, one shot, and it failed completely because of Jake McNeese.
Jake and crew camped out in a castle that had been claimed by Goering.
Yeah.
Who was stockpiling and looting, I believe. So
yeah.
The place was probably had art and whatnot, but it also had very good wine.
Yes, and
very fine whiskey. Yeah, and he even collected racehorses. We're not sure why exactly, but he liked racing.
Mm-hmm.
So when McNeese's crew was there, they decided to take the horses and exercise them, I guess you could say.
Exercise them? They put on a rodeo for the whole town.
Yeah, apparently.
Like, they just put on a rodeo for the town.
And then, you know, just the grand finale. This one just kills me.
Yeah.
Jake meets Amelia.
Amelia.
A lovely young lady with whom he hits it off and starts dating. And, you know, the things that go along with that.
Postgraduate work.
But she's just not any town dweller. She is the daughter of the gentleman who is the leader of the local chapter of the HJs, the Hitler Youth. The way Fat Electrician puts it is, he's banging the daughter of, who is essentially like a Nazi princess.
Yeah.
Banging the daughter of one of the Nazi leaders. So, yeah. Cherry on top there. Because why not, I guess.
Yeah. God, this guy was unstoppable.
He was fraternizing.
Yeah.
His last jump was in 1945 near, and I'm not really good at German, sorry, I was a French major, near Prüm, P-R-U with umlaut M,
yeah.
In Germany. In recognition of his natural leadership abilities, he ended the war as the acting first sergeant for Headquarters Company 506 Parachute Infantry Regiment.
Yeah.
However, McNeese would also be kicked out of the military in February of 46 after one last fight with the MPs because
yep.
Jake was only ever going to be himself.
Yep.
Once the war was over, the brass just really did not have any stomach for him anymore. And he also liberated, let's say, a lot of money from the safes in Europe, and so he did pretty well for himself. So what was the story of his last argument with the MPs as they were kicking him out?
They sent him to, I think it was Ponca. They sent him to Ponca to get, like, his ear repaired because during one of the battles he had, like, caught a bullet to the side of the ear, so it, like, ripped a little bit.
This man is just nothing if not stupidly lucky.
So, they sent him there, and one of his higher-ups told him that, that after he gets done with the surgery, he never wants to see him again. He's out. And Jake promptly told him that if he sees him again, he's going to be a civilian, and he'll pay all hell for it.
So, yeah, basically, Jake just threatened the guy.
And
again.
They were like, you know what? We're done with you. Get out.
Out. So, he lived in Ponca City. He continued to drink heavily until he kind of almost nearly hit a wall in his car. And he decided that things needed to change.
Okay, he described this near miss so aptly. He said that the near miss was so close, it was only by a coat of paint.
So, yeah, at that point, he decided, you know, he survived too much to be killed by something stupid, so.
Yeah, like wrecking his car or something.
So he decided to become a much more, I hate to say normal, but a less exciting lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, most people who have wild childhoods, not looking at Tony at all, eventually kind of realize, I'm getting older, maybe I should stop.
Yeah. I can confirm this. This is what happens. Actually, it sort of builds. It's one of those things of, okay, so I used to be able to do that, but now when I do that, my body sounds like a bowl of Rice Krispies and I'm in pain for a week. Maybe I shouldn't do that anymore.
Yeah. Like, the drinking benders become hangovers.
Yes.
And, you know, the wild excursions become, my God, you need a lot of Tylenol.
Yes. Oh, yeah. The back pain.
It's like, didn't I have good knees once? Where did
yep.
they go? So, yeah, he probably chilled out quite
yep.
a bit. He had a 28-year career with the United States Post Office.
He did. He worked. He was the unassuming man that delivered your packages.
His first wife, Rosita, died in 1952, and a year later, he married Martha Beam Wonders, which is kind of a cool name.
That's kind of a cool name.
And they had two sons and a daughter, and remained married until his death, which was, what, 2013?
2013.
So he was a good family man. Yeah. I can only imagine, like, he doesn't sound like the scarred kind who, like, the Vietnam veterans will not talk about it, but yeah. World War II, they seem to be like, let me tell you a story.
My granddad was the same way. Granddad was like, well, let me tell you this one. Jake seems like the guy who would be like, the kids would walk over and go, Grandpa, tell us a war story. And he's like, well, get your sippy cups. This is going to be a long one.
And not only that, but again, so many of these stories just sound absolutely untrue.
I know.
Like, but this can't possibly
be all
true.
Documented.
Now, in 1997, historian Richard E. Kilblaine,
yep,
also from Ponca City, began taking notes and recording Jake's oral history of his escapades.
His escapades, yeah.
During the war, and he wrote the books that I mentioned ahead, The Filthy 13, which Casemate Publishers published in 2003.
Yep.
And this made Jake an instant celebrity among, you know, like, World War II airborne fans,
yeah.
And he toured the United States and Europe, educating and entertaining, no doubt, younger generations with his account of the war. His account of the war.
Yeah.
He was probably way more interesting than it comes across in history class.
Him and... I'll have to explain to you the story of General Spears.
Oh, wow.
At that time, I think he was a private first class, but still.
In 2012, McNeese was awarded the French Legion of Honor Chevalier Class.
Hmm.
So he's basically made a knight,
yes,
essentially. In a 2002 interview, Jake McNeese said the Filthy 13 got away with a lot of stunts.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, we went AWOL every weekend that we wanted to. We stayed as long as we wanted to. We stole jeeps. We stole cranes. We blew up barracks. We blew down trees. And we stole the colonel's whiskey.
I love this man. I love this man.
I mean, he seems like the most fun.
Yes.
I'm glad he calmed down and had a normal life, but wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel kind of weird. Well, not weird.
This
but
is the
your
type,
stories are fascinating.
This
enough.
Is the type of guy that even me at my age, or at that age, would have been like, bro, slow down.
Right? He was an inductee in the Oklahoma Military Hall of Fame,
mm-hmm,
and an honorary colonel of the 95th Victory Division, so he finally got his promotion.
Yeah.
He was the recipient of...
Wait, was that posthumously?
I'm not really sure. We'd have to look up the date.
Yeah.
He was the recipient of an honorary master's degree in military science from Cumberland University in Lebanon, Tennessee.
Wow. That's Lebanon?
I beg your pardon.
If you say it Lebanon, they'll be like, it's Lebanon.
Understood. It's sort of like here, the whole Lancaster versus Lancaster.
Yeah.
He had participated in military maneuvers there in 1943.
Mm-hmm.
In 2010, an action figure of, yep, McNeese was released. And in 2017, now this would have been posthumous.
Yeah, this would have been posthumous.
He was among the first class.
For all of you young people who are listening, posthumous simply means after your death. I just figured, like, we're using words that some people may have not heard before.
Fair enough.
So posthumously means it's given to you after you have passed away. Sorry,
so
go ahead.
So into the Ponca City High School Hall of Fame, yep, which is probably not the biggest award.
But still, I mean...
And I should have put it in my notes, but he also had, if you look at the various awards and medals he had, it's a very long list.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm surprised, because at least at the time, they were like, please just leave. But as we said, he died in January of 2013, mm-hmm, at the age of 93. Which, again, I'm surprised he made it past, you know, his 20s.
Yep.
And that, at long last, my dears,
mm-hmm,
is the tale of Jake McNeese / Filthy McNasty.
Yep.
The luckiest soldier I have ever heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope you enjoyed this little foray into military history.
Yeah.
Let us know what you thought.
It's not as spooky as we usually cover, but it is an interesting story.
And honestly, the way this man's luck is, it's,
yeah,
like lady luck and fate combined. It's almost paranormal how lucky
he
was.
It really is.
Fat electrician he called it like this man knew he had plot armor. Like, yes, nothing would happen to him.
What we have said here in the 45 minutes that we have been talking, we have only scratched the surface of what this man did in a 3-year military service.
Absolutely. And like I said, when I looked my basics up on Wikipedia, it's just a few paragraphs. Not anywhere near as interesting. So yeah. Definitely check out his books. Check out Fat Electrician, who is, as I said, hilarious.
Like, yeah, you check out Fat Electrician because he delivers the story so well.
And there is even, you can look it up on NPR, they had an interview with him, I want to say in 2003, him being Jake McNeese himself. Yeah. So let us know what you thought, if you would like quirky little stories like this. And I don't know, maybe he became something of a nightmare for, you know, anyone who ever worked with him. The Germans.
Yeah.
certain French people who saw him landing in all the face paint.
I'm fairly sure he was like the Nazi boogeyman for a little while.
Probably. So, indeed. Let us know what you thought. Be sure to drop in on our Facebook page sometime and leave us a comment. Maybe join our Patreon. Support like yours doesn't just fall out of the sky, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Join us next time for, you know, whatever it is we're going to do then.
Yep.
In the meantime, I'm your Carolina girl, Heather.
And I'm your Florida man, Tony.
And we are Southern Fried Spooky. Until next week, bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all. No, like, seriously, here, that's the script.
Yes.
Okay, so seriously, in all actuality,
yeah,
this man at 20, jumping out of planes, blowing crap up, pretty much giving Nazis the bird and then proving that that bird meant something.
Right.
In his 20s, even I am like, dude, you did a lot.
Right.
Like, and we're talking about me looking someone else going, wow.
Right? Yeah, my idea of fun is so much more sedate.
Dude, Jake McNasty's guardian angel was probably like, oh dear God, again?
I'm pretty sure that angel joined him in those bends.
Right? Damn Nazi bet noir.
Right?